My name is Brian Wright, and I'm too tired to think of a clever opening this week, so welcome to the Shellac Stack.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, what do you do all week long?
I keep a book in which I've got down each daily endeavor. I jot down whatever I do. Some people ridicule a diary, but I really need it. I'm going to read it to you. All alone Monday, singing the blues. All alone Tuesday, reading the news. Staring and blinking, sitting there thinking, all alone. On the shelf Wednesday until the dawn comes. By myself Thursday, twirling my thumbs. Is my day, so I spend Friday all alone. On Saturday, I dread the coming of Sunday. Monday, the week starts anew. But I'm certain I could endure the week to the end, and I'm sure the days that I spend wouldn't be lonely if I were only all alone with you.
This Labor Day weekend, I don't wish to read any additional meaning into the lyrics of that song. That's All Alone Monday. I just like the record. Sung by Esther Walker and a male quartet, which included Frank Munn, Charles Harrison, Jackson Kinsey, and Frank Croxton. That's a Brunswick record recorded on the afternoon of October 13th, 1926 in New York City, in Brunswick's room number 3 at their New York City studios. A great Kalmar and Ruby tune. That's Brunswick 3349. And I just think it's a wonderful song and a really nice performance. I like Esther Walker Records. And why not? Why not indeed? Well, I note with some interest that already out in Oregon and Idaho, they're seeing some of the first snows of the season. And we're not even a week into September yet. It's still plenty hot here on the East Coast, with temperatures this week expected to be in the lower 90s every day. So I pulled out some records today that I thought would just go easy on a sort of a hot, muggy afternoon with a glass of iced tea or whatever it is that you enjoy. So nothing outrageously hot on the program today. We'll have a few up-tempo numbers, but for the most part, I've pulled out some records that are just nice for relaxing with, that are comfortable records, that are nice. How else can I say it? We'll start with one that I picked up in Japan a few years ago. This is on the Asahi label, number 4002. I have almost no idea about where or when this was recorded, although I suspect, based on the flip side of the record, this might come from Germany, the recording originally. It sounds kind of like one of those Grey Gull records from the late 1920s that were made in the United States. So who knows, maybe it originates there. But it's an interesting record called Dancing Fool. One of those things with lots of xylophone in it. Sounds like it could be the soundtrack to one of those early black and white Warner Brothers cartoons or something. The credit is only to Jazz Symphony Orchestra on the label. So make of this what you will. Here's Dancing Fool to start out this edition of the Shellac Stack.
Mm-hmm.
There you have Cozy Cole's All Stars. Great tune from the early 1930s. Just One More Chance, probably best associated with Bing Crosby. But a nice performance there that featured Coleman Hawkins and Earl Hines in the group. Cozy Cole on drums, Earl Hines piano, Coleman Hawkins tenor sax, Trummy Young on trombone, Joe Thomas trumpet, Billy Taylor bass, and Teddy Walters on guitar. Quite an all-star group. That was recorded on, February 22nd, 1944. Issued on Keynote 1300. Before that, a record from Japan on the Asahi label, number 4002, simply Jazz Symphony Orchestra. Didn't sound like any of those things. It wasn't quite jazz. It certainly wasn't a symphony, and I guess we could debate orchestra, but that was called Dancing Fool. Nice, snappy number to get things started on this edition of the Shellac Stack. And I would like to thank you for tuning in and listening to these old 78 RPM records with me. I know not everything may be to everyone's taste that we play here, but I enjoy the wide variety of music that was recorded during the 78 era, and it's always my goal on the Shellac Stack programs to play a variety of things for you. And the next two records I have feature veteran singers of the acoustic era recorded electrically by OK Records in 1928 and 1929. So we're going to have the benefit of state-of-the-art sound from 1928 and 29, capturing the voices of some singers we customarily associate with the 19-teens and maybe very early 20s. First, it's Henry Burr singing a song called Somewhere a Voice is Calling, recorded October 26, 1928. Henry Burr is accompanied by Justin Ring's Reed Ensemble. And this is, I think, maybe the latest Henry Burr record that I've got in my collection. He wasn't doing too much by 1928 and 29. After that, we'll hear Irving Kaufman, also with Justin Ring's String Ensemble this time. OK 41265, it's a great song, Why Can't You? And by De Silva, Brown, and Henderson, and Al Jolson slapped his name on it, but whether he really had anything to do with it or not is debatable. From April 25th, 1929, it's Irving Kaufman singing that one. So, two veteran singers now, beginning with Henry Burr. Here's Somewhere a Voice is Calling.
Dusk and the shadows calling for land and sea. Somewhere a voice is calling, unfair, keeping your share of happiness. You are to blame, they called your name, you did not claim your happiness. You say you're through and you sigh. How do you know? Till you try. Violets from tiny seeds, fight their way up through the weeds. Violets can do it, why can't you? Little brooklets breaking free, work their way down to the sea. Little brooks can do it, why can't you? Hopes and dreams are things that life can shatter. Learn to lift your head and say it doesn't matter. Birdies sing in cages too. They know that's the thing to do. Little birds can do it, why can't you? Hopes and dreams are things that life can shatter. Learn to lift your head and say it doesn't matter. Birdies sing in cages too. They know that's the thing to do. Little birds can do it, why can't you?
It isn't too often that we get to hear Irving Kaufman in crooner mode, but I like it. I think he transitioned very well from the acoustic recording horn to the electric microphone in the late 1920s, and he proves it there with Justin Ring's string ensemble, OK41265. Why Can't You? Before that, Henry Burr with Justin Ring's Reed Ensemble, OK41149. Both of those in nice shape. That was Somewhere a Voice is Calling from October of 1928. You're listening to the Shellac Stack, a program featuring 78 RPM records of the 19-teens, 20s, and 30s, and 40s, and 50s. And thank you for tuning in and listening to these records with me. If you enjoy the program, why not tell a friend? Maybe they would enjoy it too. This next record is something of an interesting disc, at least I think so. It has a mystery trumpet player who has caught the attention of a number of jazz record collectors through the years. Jazz Oracle featured this record on their CD, Dime Store Hot Dance. And in the liner notes, Ross Wilby suggests that the mystery trumpet player might be Tommy Gott. That's certainly possible. It's interesting because it's a really good tune, but it's one that was not recorded, to my knowledge, by anyone else besides Billy James' dance orchestra, here under the pseudonym of Bob Green's dance orchestra. The tune is They Don't Come Better Than Betty. And the composer credit simply says Farrar. I'm guessing this was one of those tunes composed by a staff composer for the Regal Record Company. In an effort to save money, it seems they would often pair a hit song on one side of a record with something that they had commissioned from one of their house composers on the reverse, for which they would pay an upfront fee, maybe $10, $15 to the composer if they were feeling generous, and then they wouldn't have to pay any further composer royalties. So this was a money-saving, cost-saving measure, and it didn't always result in the best songs, but in this case, I think we got quite a nice tune out of the deal. So here's They Don't Come Better Than Betty. We'll hear Jerry White singing the vocal under the pseudonym of Nat Walters. Oriole 1338 is the record number, and this comes to us from September 4th, 1928. Thank you.
So that state in it, in just 1 minute, they're through. Oh, she's one adorable baby. What I do for her ain't maybe. The more you know her, the more she'll grow upon you. Everybody wants to meet her, see that winning smile, 'cause there ain't nobody sweeter in a thousand mile. Oh, they don't come better than Betty, there ain't none better than Betty. They don't come better, 'cause I know Betty's the best.
Be one of my favorite songs to come out of the year 1928, Don't Be Like That, tuned by Gottler, Tobias, and Pinkard, sung for us by the ubiquitous Scrappy Lambert under the pseudonym of Chester Hale, and played for us by Sam Lannon's orchestra under the pseudonym of the Broadway Broadcasters. I think perhaps my favorite version of that is the one made by Gene Goldkett's orchestra, which features, I think, one of the very best arrangements of any dance band record of the late 1920s. All kinds of really wonderful chords and just a really remarkable piece of music. But this version wasn't bad either. Before that, Bob Green's dance orchestra, which was a pseudonym masking Billy James. Not that that does us much good, because I don't think anybody knows much about Billy James either. That was an Oriole record, number 1338, They Don't Come Better Than Betty, sung by Jerry White, and recorded September 4th, 1928, in New York City. Well, if I turn to the mailbag, I had a nice note recently from another Brian, who writes, quote, I too have a fondness for the dance records, particularly from the acoustic era. Often hear you mention the rarity of a given record. How do you know? Is it just time collecting and or speaking to other collectors? Certain blues and country records have been well documented, but how would you know if any given, as an example, Paul Whiteman recording was in limited supply? Well, that's a good question, and my method certainly isn't foolproof. I use kind of a combination of some of the things that Brian mentioned. I generally will start by looking on sites like the Discography of American Historical Recordings, DAHR, which you can find yourself if you go to Google or your favorite search engine. But I also will talk to other collectors and hear about which records are rare. And a good deal of my gauging of a record's rarity comes just from personal experience, pawing through thousands and thousands of crates of 78s over the last 25 years, and noticing which records turn up quite frequently, things like Paul Whiteman's acoustic record of Homesick on Victor, which I've seen many, many, many times. But other records just don't seem to turn up as often. Another indicator can be the prices paid on sites like eBay and sites that index past eBay sales. Certainly, records that command high prices must be usually quite rare, though not always. Sometimes you'll find people paying through the nose for something as common as Bing Crosby's White Christmas. I've seen copies of that go for over $100, and it makes me scratch my head because that is not an especially rare record. But usually, if you see records selling for several hundred or more, usually they're fairly rare. Of course, it doesn't work in reverse. There are plenty of rare records which will never fetch more than a few dollars, perhaps, because most collectors just aren't that interested. From the acoustic era, there are, I'm sure, many, many, many acoustic Henry Burr records, speaking of Henry Burr, which may be quite rare, but for which I doubt very many collectors would open up their wallets and willingly shell out lots of money. I don't think I would. But those methods, a combination of them, help me to gauge which records are more common than others. And there you have it. Well, let's continue now with some more music. Next up, Patrick Conway's band. And this is a two-sided record, and I have no way of knowing whether this one is especially rare. I doubt it, though I don't know that I've seen too many copies. Okay, 4137. This is a medley of melodies from Giuseppe Verdi's famous opera La Traviata, recorded in May of 1920, at a time when recording a complete opera would have entailed 30, 40, or more 78 RPM records, making it unwieldy and expensive. There was great demand for these reductions, for these two-sided medleys of popular arias. So we'll listen to Conway's band now, and a selection from La Traviata.
Thank you.
Well, turning back to the mailbag once again, I want to acknowledge a couple of additional notes that I've received over the past few weeks, including one very nice note from Roy in the United Kingdom, and also from my friend Fred over in New Jersey. And on a recent visit to the Carnegie Library in Pittsburgh, I visited briefly with my friend Tim Williams, who also listens occasionally to the Shellac Stack. So to all of you, thank you for mentioning the program to me. Thanks for your kind comments. If you'd like to write to me, either just to say hello or to offer your suggestions or make a request, you can email me shellacstack@gmail.com. That's all one word, shellacstack@gmail.com. Or you can visit my website, shellacstack.com, and send me a note through the contact form on my website as well. I'd love to hear from you. More records, though, now. Let's keep the music playing. Here's Cliff Jackson, one of my favorite stride pianists of the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, and I think one of the most underrated as well. He had just a formidable left hand that had all kinds of tricky syncopations and things going on at a time when a lot of other stride pianists would maybe play more straight. Cliff Jackson is really a two-handed pianist in the very best sense of the word. Here he is on a black and white 78, number 25, recorded July 16th, 1944. It's an old tune from the early 20s by Isham Jones, It Had to Be You. We'll follow that with one from Fred Elizalde and his Hot Music, recorded for Brunswick over in London at Rudolf Steiner Hall in May of 1928. We'll hear another tune that was quite old by the time it was recorded, Shelton Brooks' famous The Dark Town Strutter's Ball. And this is, I think, one of my very favorite versions of that tune. And incidentally, you'll hear a little clink at the beginning before the music starts, because this is a dub. A lot of Fred Elizalde's records seem to exist primarily in dubbed versions, which is unfortunate because the sound is dulled somewhat. Essentially, if you're not familiar with the process of dubbing, they would take the master record and play it back and cut a new master from the signal being played back from that first one. So it's a second-generation copy, you might say, and those usually don't sound quite as good. Anyway, it's a British Brunswick number 02333. First up, though, here's Cliff Jackson. Thank you. Fred Elizalde and his hot music, and a marvelous, marvelous arrangement of the Darktown Strutters Ball, recorded in May of 1928 in London. Before that, from July of 1944, we heard Cliff Jackson at the piano, It Had to Be You. I should play the flip side of that sometime, which is even more impressive. It's, I think I heard somebody once refer to it as Bonkers Stride, version of Who, that great song from the mid-1920s. We'll come back to that and play it another time. Today, though, I felt like not getting too wild in the musical selections, keeping it a little more relaxing. This next record from Nye Mayhew and his orchestra, here on the label credited as Art Kahn's Orchestra, is just a really nice tune. It's called Night on the Water, and we'll hear it sung for us by Helen Ward. This is one of her early records from February 2nd, 1934.
Drifting by, we heard a banjo strumming and lazy voices coming. There was the moon on the water, it had a lovely charm. With your hand in my hand, your head against my arm, we sang a summer night song, a languorous and light song. And we sat and watched until the moon dipped under the rim of the sea. Your eyes were kind, the night was full of wonder and magic for me. There was the night on the water, I never shall forget. The sailboats like dreamboats, I'm thinking of them yet. The world was far away there, we wanted so to stay there forever.
Perfect record number 15891, Night on the Water, sung by Helen Ward with Art Khan's Orchestra, which was masking the identity of bandleader Nye Mayhew, recorded in February of 1934. And that brings us towards the end of today's Stack of 78s here on the Shellac Stack. As always, thank you for spending this hour with me, listening to music of the 19-teens, 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s. If you've been following this program regularly these last few weeks, you know I've had some difficulty in keeping my regular sort of every other week schedule, and I have to confess it's possible it may be more than another 2 weeks before I return with an additional program. I will try to be back as soon as possible, although the Shellac Stack is one of the more enjoyable things I get to do on a weekly or bi-weekly basis. I do... have to say that it can't be my number one priority. Sometimes other forces in life take over and demand my attention, and this fall is shaping up to be an especially busy one. I'll try to return with more 78s sooner rather than later, but in the meantime, if you want to follow, you can check out the Shellac Stack Facebook page, where I'll post updates in the event that it needs to be more than 2 weeks until the next one. In the meantime, I will leave you with hopes of seeing you in 2 more weeks, and we'll leave you with a nice record from Rex Stewart's Big Four. This is issued on the HRS label, number 1004. It's a reissue of a recording made in Paris in April of 1939. It's called Finesse, or, as it's retitled here, Night Wind, and it's a pleasant way to finish off the program. Thanks again for listening. I hope to see you in 2 weeks, maybe a little longer, but never fear, I'll be back with more 78s on the Shellac Stack. Take care. Bye-bye.